Welcome back to the podcast. It is April the 13th. And before we get started today, I wanted to give a shout out to Jeannie Colwin. So Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach in Los Angeles. In fact, you might remember that she guest hosted the podcast this past January and came on live with me back in August of last year. So gosh, hard to believe 8 months already. Jeannie facilitates breath work to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and decrease pain. Are you having trouble calming the monkey mind? Well, she's your gal. It's not about controlling or managing your stress or thoughts. Instead, it's about shifting and improving the relationship that you have with them. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely and is obsessed with getting her clients fast results. And we've got some exciting news. Jeannie's going to be launching her first group coaching program next month, and you could take advantage of this pre-sale opportunity. If you've been nervous to commit to one-on-one coaching because of time or money, or perhaps you're just not feeling ready, this group coaching program could very well be your next step. This three-month group coaching program will focus on decreasing stress so that you can regulate your nervous system and have more guilt-free fun. If you want to learn more about this exciting program, sign up on Jeannie's waitlist, which is in the show notes to receive more info. And if you're interested, I'm going to encourage you to sign up now because this is going to be a small group and those spots will fill up quickly. So check out the show notes to learn a little bit more. Thank you, Jeannie. So a new patron on the podcast as well. I want to give a shout out to Paul, and then we'll say Amanda and Elise and Enda, Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Anthony, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the podcast, monetarily supporting the show, and getting a shout out like this at the beginning of every episode, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. How long did it take to do those plugs? 2.5 minutes, 2 minutes and 44 seconds or so. Hey, thanks for tuning in the last couple of weeks. Today I was planning on doing a solo episode. And like I said, I also have, one in the hopper from a psychotherapist. And then earlier today, I actually recorded an episode with, and you likely have heard of them because of the TMS fame. They do a weekly show on YouTube, but Dr. Tova Goldfein and Rose Hui. So Tova is in Israel, Rose is in Australia, and the plan was to jump on the line with them, go through the typical interview thing, learn about them, learn about their backgrounds, how do they get into doing what they're doing, what's different about them, what's different about what it is that they do and how they approach it and things like that. And then Tova asked me how I was doing, and I told her that it's kind of been a rough month, month and change or so. Rose jumped on the line a little bit late. We didn't know if she was going to be joining us or not, so it sounds a little jumbled at the beginning. And then this very much turned into a, probably 75% of it was about me, them asking me questions. And it was really nice. It was really nice. I'll say that. I try to make the show as educational as possible. I think you're going to get something out of the stuff that we talk about in this. But it was just nice to just have a couple of people to conversate with that know this work. And they got in quickly to, and I was telling my wife, I'm like, I don't know how we even got to some of the topics that we talked about, but it's like, we'd be talking about one thing, and then just the way to which they asked the questions and maybe even the silence that they gave after asking those questions, I just felt like I just kept giving more and more and more. And it was nice. So today's episode is almost like a fly on the wall of a therapy session, if you will. So without further ado, here is Tova and Rose. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And it's been far too long. I feel like 225 or whatever episodes without having Tova Goldfein on all the way from Israel is way too long. And I feel so bad because we've talked, I've been on your show, you've emailed about coming on mine, I haven't responded, I don't have a great excuse, but I'm happy you're here. Thank you for being here.
Are we live?
We're live, we're on.
No guilt, Eddie, no guilt.
Ooh.
Ah, I think Rose is coming.
Yeah.
Hey, Rose.
Rose, are you there?
Yay.
Rose. Yeah, I thought it was 6 o'clock, but it's 5 o'clock.
Must be the recent time change that Tova was talking about. Well, this is a surprise. So originally the interview was scheduled to be myself and Tova and Rose. Hoey, is that pronunciation correct? Out of Australia?
Have you got to say that again?
Can you hear us, Rose?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're on my phone. I tried to put you on my computer, and it wouldn't come up, the message. So I thought I'd better get organized and just do it on the phone.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Well, so I had thought, I came in a half hour ago thinking this was going to be an interview with the three of us. And then Tova had said that you were on vacation, didn't know if you were coming. And so we waited and then you weren't there. And so it was just going to be the two of us. And now it's going to be the three of us. So you're on, but you're on vacation somewhere, right?
Yes. Well, I'm in a motel room.
in Sydney, Australia,
in my pajamas.
Oh, okay. Well, that's no problem. It's the Zoom time.
But Eddie said he really never had anyone on that knows about ISTDP, and he's excited to talk to you about it and us about it.
Yeah, so it's a gaping hole in my interview ship is somebody that's an expert in that. So I'm going to want to pick your brain a little bit on that today.
Good. So, okay. When are you starting?
We already started. This is live. We're already recording. We're on the episode.
Oh my God. And here am I telling you.
Rose.
Yeah.
Nothing embarrasses us. Remember?
That's what you think.
Rose, I'll tell you what. Let's give you a couple minutes to get settled and all that, because I know it's kind of a surprise you didn't expect us to actually be recording. So what I'd like to do is get a little bit of background from both of you, because somehow you got involved in this work, and somehow, despite being on the opposite sides of the globe from each other, you have somehow found each other. So that maybe that'll be like part two, and then
Michael,
we'll just kind
Galinsky.
Of yeah. Okay, well, perfect. Well, we'll get there. Maybe we'll start with Tova, though, just to kind of get acclimated a little bit and bring us in. Now, I just found this out, that Tova means happy in Hebrew. Is that right?
Good. It means good in Hebrew.
Sorry, good in Hebrew. you got involved in TMS work somehow. Now, probably just about everybody listening to this right now has heard your name in some way, because like we had talked about off air just before we started recording, we've doubled up. We've had a lot of the same guests on the different shows that we do. So take us back. How did you get started in the work that you're doing now?
Okay, let's make a long story short. So I'm a chiropractor, and we can have a whole show about how you and your buddy Brad bash chiropractors. and I'm not going to defend chiropractors. I'm going to just defend that there are good doctors and not so good doctors, and there's some great chiropractors and not such great chiropractors. But I am a chiropractor that understands this intimate connection between the mind and the body, and I am very proud to be a chiropractor and a mind-body therapist. And it's chiropractors are wonderful people to connect to the mind intimacy, because it's such a spiritual thing we do by helping the nerves and the muscles connect to the, I can't even get into it now. It's a beautiful scenario of, I was taught in chiropractic school. I mean, I got a doctorate in chiropractic, and they were teaching me that there's this innate intelligence that's my nervous system. And this innate intelligence, because honestly, let's sit right this way. What's making your heartbeat, Eddie? One word answer. What's making your heartbeat?
Brain.
Okay. What's making your stomach digest?
Brain.
Okay. What's making your brain work?
I can't use the same thing. I can't say brain. I don't know.
Your nervous system.
Okay, nervous system.
Okay. What's making my nervous system? Well, some kind of, most people feel some kind of divine source. I mean, God. And in chiropractic school, where I said I got a doctorate degree, I had to take boards, and they're talking about there's this innate intelligence that's connected to universal intelligence. And through an adjustment, which is opening up the nerves and releasing pressure, we're allowing the universal intelligence to keep that innate intelligence working on every organ, tissue, gland, and cell in your body. it's like so TMS when you think about chiropractic. But that's beside the point. I became a chiropractor, and I grew up in a home that where there was sickness. My mom had MS, so I was very keen to something happening. And it was a fairly traumatic life, and it was a big T, like Michael Galinsky will say. And I evolved, and I was a chiropractor, but I always felt a little different, a little bit out of the box from even being a chiropractor for many years. And very soon on, I began to understand, why does this person get disease? Why does this person get sick? And myself being in the therapeutic process for many years, I began to put things together. And funny that the first book someone gave me was called Anatomy of an Illness by Norman Cousins. Now, 3 nights ago, I spoke to one of Norman Cousins' daughter. He had 4 daughters, Norman Cousins, and one of them is in Israel, and she's going to come on the show with Rose and I.
Cool.
And she happened to say she had gotten divorced, and she'd gotten a terrible arthritic response, a lot of inflammatory responses in her joints. And she was telling me that she went and she had epitherapy. She literally had bees. Have you heard of epitherapy?
Mm-mm.
Fascinating. I've heard of a number of people where they go and they have bees sting you and create new inflammation that starts the inflammatory process. Anyway, it's a therapy that helps a lot of people with inflammatory diseases. The point I'm making is that she got TMS after she got divorced, but then she was making the connection. The point is, Norman Cousins. So I met her daughter, his daughter. He had 4 daughters. I read the book and it changed my life. And then one thing led to another. Only 10 years ago did I really get turned on to John Sarno when I was here in Israel. And I started to get very involved in mind body more than it was before, more John Sarno focus. And I thought, like, I'm going to call this guy Michael Galinsky, and maybe he's busy. Maybe his secretary will talk to me. I don't know. And I like reach him and he like answers the phone. And I'm like,
are you talking about Sarno or Galinsky?
Michael Galinsky.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I connected with Michael, and then he said, and it was like the beginning of his movie. It was like 6 or 7 years ago. And he's like, you got it. Like, there's a woman in Australia who's like really also interested in the movie, because I began to promote All the Rage here in Israel. I didn't know about All the Rage or Sarno in America. I might have heard of him. So 10 years ago, I got very into Sarno's work. And Michael said, connect with my colleague, Rose, in Australia. We connected, and she's like, oh, I'm coming to Israel. Let's meet. That was it. Change the time. Corona hits March 2019.
20.
I get this brainwave, as Rose calls it, and I'm like, we got to do something on the Facebook. We got to do something. Corona's coming and people are going to freak out and they're going to have an exaggerated reaction because our health is being threatened. And I call Michael and I said, we got to do something. Can you help me? I know nothing about technical. I'm full of anxiety, but we got to go do something. He said, call Rose. And the three of us planned to go on live March 2019. And we planned it. And he said, all right, ladies, I'm out of here. And Rose and I are like, what? And the rest is history.
Rose, there was some tapping a little while ago. It sounded like maybe you were typing. So I muted your mic, and now it's telling me I can't unmute you. Are you able to unmute you?
Is that it?
There you are. Okay, cool.
Good.
So it was actually Michael that brought you two together. So Michael knew Rose first.
Yes.
Okay. Did you consult on the movie, or how did you get to know? Which, by the way, if you don't know Michael Galinsky, I've interviewed him before, but he was the director for All the Rage, which I'd highly encourage you to go check it out if you haven't. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it in a lot of different streaming places. But if you just Google All the Rage Sarno, you'll find it. You'll inevitably
alltheragedoc.com.
Okay. Alltheragedoc.com. So, Rose, did you consult with Michael for the movie and kind of help on that, or how did you get to know him?
No. I found a GoFundMe page, and I thought what Michael is writing about it speaks ISTDP,
yeah.
Intensive Short-Term Dynamic Psychotherapy. I thought, wow, someone's actually making a movie about it. So I contributed to it. And then he wrote to everyone and said, I'm coming to Australia. Would anyone be able to help me show the movie? And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll do that. Just like that.
Yeah.
And I phoned up all the cinemas in Melbourne and nobody would take it on. So I thought, well, that's not very good. They don't appreciate it. So I'll set it up myself. So with a beautiful friend called Colette, she and I put posters all around Melbourne and we filled the cinema, one of the trendiest ones in Melbourne, Cinema Nova, and we filled the house, two sessions, and we had Michael there. And, yeah, and then, of course, Michael then told me about Tova, but I'd already had Tova on Facebook as a friend, and I'd already been to Israel, but because I was in Tel Aviv, I thought, oh, she'd be down the road. But, of course, she's 2 hours from Tel Aviv, yeah. But anyway. So I never actually managed to meet her. And, of course, ISTDP is about anxiety, about defences, about early attachment trauma. So this is what all the rage was about, having trauma in your childhood and then somatic pain. So, yeah, so there I was. And then when Tova said, let's do it, I thought, well, why not? No, so here we are 2 years later.
And so now what are you two doing? I mean, I know what you're doing, or at least I know on weekly something that you're doing. But talk about what do you guys do? What do you guys promote?
Pardon? Say that again?
What projects are you both working on? It's a weekly thing,
well,
right?
Well, we interview people on your Monday night and my Tuesday morning at my 5 a.m. And we look – our resources or what we look at is people who have cured, people who are on the journey, but also people who can help. And I like to sort of see that there are people that help out there, so that it doesn't matter who you go to, but as long as you go to somewhere that says, yes, this is curable, this is not a disease or an affliction that you've got for the rest of your life, and it's related to anxiety and it's related to trauma. So the more people we can get on, the better. And as you know, we've got you on for that self-same reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to add to that. I think that, you know, Rose and I are so inspired by our own health and family and experience in life and work and disease and chronic pain. And we were inspired greatly by all the rage in Sarno's work and all the doctors. You know, I remember picking up Back in Control 10 years ago, and here I am hanging out with David Hanscom. You know, like, it's unbelievable, the community. So we were inspired 2 years ago, and we never would have believed what would have happened, where we wanted to inspire others by educating. And also what you said, Eddie, before the show, before you went live, was there's lots of information and education out there, especially on the internet. You know, a lot of people are suffering so much because they don't have the tools to apply it and implement it, or they forget, or their habits or their defenses or their trauma, big T or little T, you know, takes a front seat. So they're back into their victim role and they can't seem to get ahead because it's the pattern. So we're really, what's special about our show is we're about people applying and implementing this work. And that might mean hard work. That might mean some
change. It's not might. It is hard work.
It is hard work.
It is hard work, yes. And there's no denying that. There's no doubting that turning it around and seeing that your emotions are involved is hard work, yeah. And it comes to some people just like that. They read the book. Sarno's book, and they get better. But mostly people need help. So, yeah. And this is a form of encouragement and help that we provide week in and week out, just like you, Eddie. Yeah.
No, we also, Rose and I have a website, a beautiful website. We have a service. We've done some classes on the presence process. We've done some group therapy. Rose is an outstanding ISTDP therapist. I'm a pain specialist, chiropractor, you know, on site. I have a table in my home, but I'm helping people with some of the TMS insights and methods to make some character change and heal. And I don't, you know, the word cure is what a god, but it is a journey. And even I asked Eddie before the show how he's feeling. He said, well, he's having a little bit of a relapse. So maybe we want to do a little work with you, Eddie, and help you on your show.
Yeah, since Rose, since you weren't on when Tove and I were talking about that, I had a, it was roughly a month ago at this, I don't know, might have been 5 weeks ago or so. Just started having, I was doing some mobility exercise. I train in weightlifting, and was contemplating competing for this, for, we call them masters, but basically this, it's crazy to say, but in weightlifting, seniors or masters, which means the old people, is anybody over 35. So I'm over 35, which is, you know, it's just part of the vernacular. So, I've been contemplating throwing my name in the hat for that and competing. But I was doing some mobility work and just started having – it wasn't like – I had a relapse about a year ago, and when it happened, it was dramatic. Like hit the ground, couldn't move my legs, like that kind of thing. This one, far more subtle, finished my mobility work. A few hours later, starts to tighten up, continues to tighten up, won't let go, that kind of thing. And that has kind of gone on for a few weeks. I haven't had anything like that. But one thing that I have done in the last few weeks is, perhaps maybe looking back, too much work, maybe almost too much TMS type work, maybe too much journaling, maybe too much somatic tracking, maybe too much meditation. Because when I had talked about a year ago where it was dramatic, it was sudden. It was like you were talking to me, Rose, and I was facing you. And then Tove came up behind with a hot bat and just smacked me in the back of the, in my back, and I just fell, and that was it. But my whole approach then was, I'm not going to do anything. I know what's going on. I'll be fine. And I was fine in a day or a day and a half, despite it being this very dramatic instance. This one, not dramatic, and I was doing a lot. And then kind of this morning on my morning walk, just kind of decided, okay, maybe you're doing too much, and like, maybe you just let it be and just, you know, have it in sort of reserve at that. And I feel quite a bit different than even I did a few hours ago. So that's kind of bringing you up to speed on where things have been going with me in the last few weeks that Tove was talking about.
So what do you think? I mean, I said to him, as long as you accept the process that, like, if you accept your choice, he chose one time to just head right into, I'm going to go do all my tools and apply them and feel better. Or I'm just going to do nothing and just accept it. Like, I think if he, whatever he accepts is the best thing, as opposed to judging or trying too hard. So that's how I framed it. How would you frame the different incidents, Rose?
Sorry, I missed that.
So I was telling him, because he was comparing the two different ways that he approached.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
And that's why he was accepting both, and neither was wrong or right the way he approached his healing. The fact that he did one way and one the opposite is not like, oh, that worked and that didn't work. He accepted his reality.
Sure, but in one instance it might work, and another instance it might not, depending on the person. Yeah, so from my perspective, I'd sort of say that it would depend on what was the cause of it, what was the emotional experience that he was having, and how that affected it. Yeah, it might be disappointment. It, as he said, it might be overwork. Could have been a variety of things. But first of all, I'd have to find out about his feelings, and that's what I'd address first. I'd address what were your feelings about doing all that sort of work, and then I'd see if he was anxious or if he was defensive, depending on what he showed me in his reaction to me. If he was anxious, I'd point it out. I'd point out the anxiety pathways for him so he'd be able to self-reflect on how anxiety was playing on him. And I'd then see if, as he got stronger with that, if he started telling me, but maybe this or maybe that, or I'd notice his defences coming up, and I'd help him see his defences, and so he could undo those. And then gradually the pain would go away.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish that, at least at the time of pain emergence, I wish that I could tell you exactly what was going on or exactly what I may have been thinking or not been thinking at the time. It's so far removed now at this point. But what I can say, and I've talked about this a lot, sort of the early indicator when I read Sarno's book 5 years ago, and because I had never, this, the whole concept of mind, body, anything had never even crossed my mind. It didn't come into my peripheral, anything like that. Everything was very physical. As an athlete, it's like, I get hurt, I would go and see a chiropractor. I get, which by the way, Tova, my, if we want to call it distrust, whatever, of chiropractic as a profession, that only began after 3 consecutive really bad experiences when I was in just the worst of the worst of pain. I'm talking very visual stuff. Your brachial plexus is compressed. If you lift something over your head, your hands are going to go numb. I was actually just looking the other day because, and maybe there's something to this, that I would say that the worst stretch of pain I ever had was probably in that February to May timeframe, all the way back in 2017. And the guy in particular that really turned me off to any of that kind of work, I won't dox him, but he's a doctor in Seattle, likes to believe that, or seemingly likes to believe that he's the Dr. Oz or the Dr. Oz of the area, because he's out promoting himself all the time. But I recently came across, because there's an app for my iPhone that's called Time Hop, so it'll show me anything, any picture, any memory, anything like that that I had had every year from the year before, as long as I've had a smartphone. And he had me keep a exercise log. So he's having me do various different types of exercises. This was core stuff. This was nerve glides. There was a lot of different things. But he had told me to do them about every 20 to 30 minutes the entire time I was awake. So this was 16, 17, 18 hours a day of doing 2 or 3 exercises per hour. And I would do them like on like the floor of the bathroom at work, like, because there was no place to get some privacy to do this, the stuff that I needed to do. And I remember in the beginning, I had asked him, what is a reasonable amount of time for me to get better on? I'm like, I've had this for so long and I've been diagnosed with a few different things, but mostly keeps coming back to thoracic outlet syndrome. And he had said, if you come 3 to 4 days per week for 6 weeks, you'll be better at the end of this. So we got to the end of 6 weeks, and
okay,
I said,
"That's what I want to do. I want to focus on your feelings, but not how you feel about this chiropractor."
Yeah. Well, so anyway,
let's have another show.
Yeah.
Let's have a whole show about chiropractors and just ironing it out another yeah. time. But now I want to focus on your feelings.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. Good idea. So anyway, what I was going to say is that
Let's focus on your anger towards the chiropractor.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's the issue. But
because, but you see, now you met a good witch.
Yeah. is it? Oh no, that's the Wizard of Oz. I was just thinking, my daughter's.
Let's just say that because you can't judge a person by his career. You can't do that. It's his personality.
Yeah, that's true. It was just, again, it was just having 3 people with very similar personalities at different practices and companies, bam, 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 in back-to-back-to-back fashion. That's where
but
I'm kind of...
Do you have some anger? Honestly, I'm serious. Do you have some anger towards, like, when you get pain, do you feel angry about, like, some of the past things that have happened?
It never comes to
mind.
It never comes to mind. I'm sure it's there, but it doesn't come to mind.
Okay. Now, you're putting a bad thingo on angry at the moment. Can I interrupt and
yes.
say anger isn't a bad thing, but rage is?
Yes, please do.
Yeah. Anger is a normal, natural thing that we have when we're hurt. But if we bottle it up, it becomes rage. And then we discharge. We shout, we slam the door, we walk away. whereas that's rage. That's when anger is then locked down, repressed, and of course it's like a pressure cooker. It's locked down, and then when we're hurt or offended or whatever, we react rather than respond, because anger allows us to respond, and respond where nobody gets hurt. And this is one of the main things that I find as I speak to patients, that they think that their anger is bad, whereas in actual fact, our anger is there to help us. You know, it keeps us close to everyone and allows us to be in relationship with people, because we're able to actually say what our problem is. Does that make sense? It's our anger that helps us to actually be in communion with everyone else, to be in a relationship with other people, but not when we block it down and ignore it. So just to clarify that.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that before I went on the tangent is that one of the first things that I did when I first found the Sarno work was that, and I think he actually just by total coincidence had said something about, or had, I can't remember if he implied it or explicitly said it in one of his future books after Healing Back Pain, but it was trying to find correlations between what's going on in life and when you have symptoms. So one of the things that I did, and again, I think he said this in a subsequent book, which is why I thought it so fascinating, and that like him and I were kindred souls, that because I started reading his book the weekend he died, just as a coincidence. And it's just, you know, one of those things in life that just happens. I started making a list of when have I had these symptoms? And I just thought back as long as I could, which most of my memories are, it's not that I don't have distant memories like as a kid, but just a lot of the things that I remember are pretty much since, like, let's say, I don't know, mid 2000s or maybe early 2000s, pretty much as long as I've been old enough to work, like have a job. And what I started finding was that a near one-to-one correlation, I would have some kind of a symptom that required a medical intervention in order to feel better, go to a doctor, whatever, get anti-inflammatories for tendonitis or elbow problems or shoulder dislocations or whatever, that they always tended to happen in the last month of a quarter. And I've been in sales for a long time, so I would see these things happen every year in March, June, September, and December. And the later in the year you got, the more dramatic the symptoms were. So like in December one year, you know, I had the flu. They said I probably had C. diff. I had, like, there was a lot of, it just sort of got bad. And then you would get to the start of the next quarter, which is January, April, July, and October. And suddenly I was fine. Let's get ready. I don't know. That was weird. My elbow hurt. Yeah, that was weird. But I took my pills and I'm whatever. I'm better. So that was one thing that I had thought about. And it is curious to me that March of 2021 and March of 2022 were the two relapses. So there's something to it, or there's something there. And I don't know if maybe there's a connection to, like, hey, the world really fell apart in March of 2020, right? So life dramatically changed. I became a salesman and a school teacher overnight for two kids. So I think there's seasonality to this for sure. Very strongly, actually.
Well, yeah. You mean seasonality in so much as seasons in your life?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Yes.
So this flare up now that you're having... So you're saying this flare up now that you're having is a calm one. You're just not doing anything and you're feeling better.
Well, as of like 6 hours ago, yes. But I told you that in the whole month prior, it had been, okay, I'm going to get it. Let me give you an example. From the middle of last week until the end of the week, I listened to Healing Back Pain. I read the Mind Body Prescription. I watched all the Rage on Friday night. Laid in front of my fish tanks. I watched the fish do their thing, and I watched all the Rage, which I haven't watched in 3-4 years. I always forget how good it is.
Wow.
For starters. Yeah. And then did my somatic process, going to bed every single night, sort of feeling like, okay, like, these are the things. It's a long enough period of time has gone by that this should have gone away. And I even made the mistake a couple of weeks ago of actually going to see a PT, just like, tell me that it doesn't seem like there is, you know, to rule out. Does there something seem like it's really off? And actually, ironically, she had asked me what my take was on mindfulness and pain. And I was like, It's funny you say that. So all the exercises she gave me, I did them for a day or two, but then I was like, she is implying here that the, and I was like, does it seem like there's a big issue here? And she basically just said, I think that you did a movement you weren't used to, which was true. Your system sort of wigged out and everything's kind of on lockdown. And really it just needs to know that it's safe, that there's nothing wrong. And I just thought like, and I've had a few instances in the, I don't know if it's because I'm looking for it now, but I've had a lot of instances in the last 3 or 4 years, basically since I found this mind body work, that there's probably a lot more physical practitioners that do think that way. But, you know, again, I don't know if it's because I'm looking for it or if that's just risen and a lot more people have learned about it in the last few years. I don't know what the right answer is.
Well, the bottom line is you're having some pain now that's chronic, and it's right.
Yeah, I think chronic's like defined as 6 weeks. I'm not there yet, but
sounds
definitely
like it's,
yeah, definitely longer than it should be.
Find a nice TDP therapist in your city, right, and they'll ask you about your feelings about all these things, and then you'll know why you've got the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going, like, are you angry at yourself for going 6 weeks? Are you like a little bit disappointed in judging, like, since 6 weeks, what's going on? And are you judging yourself that you went to a physical therapist because you might've thought you might've injured, like, what's going on underneath that judgment?
I mean, I don't think so. I think a lot of, the judgments that I have stem around like work and success, like that kind of stuff.
Perfectionism, do you think?
Yes, most certainly. Sales is a very, it's tough. I was a high performer for years and years and years and worried about it all the time. You know, first thing I thought about in the morning, last thing I thought about. I've been tremendously different just in the last few years. But every single year that you have success, your superiors and your bosses and the bosses' bosses and things like that, the ante just gets upped every single time, right? You have a great month and it's not so much here's a pat on the back, you had a great month or you had a great quarter.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah, it's
a lot of pressure.
It's yeah, sure, you did really good, but now let's see how you can do a lot more. And I kind of look around at some of the other people that I'm peers with that maybe I started around the same time with that haven't had as much success, and their expectations are much lower from the superiors because they haven't done as well. So it's like a catch. There's definitely anger in that it's like, I'm doing a really great job. So now you want me to do even a more of a great job when like these other people can sort of do an okay job, and it's okay that they just sort of continue to do an okay job. So then it's like a catch 22, just like, you know, do I just never get a break? Like that kind of, so that sort of thing. And then only multiplies with kids and bills and coaching stuff, which I love, and I love my girls, but like, hey man, they've got opinions. They've got attitudes. You know?
They're like their dad.
Yeah. Once Zoe and Audrey started getting opinions, and like COVID has been so hard, not just from a sense of the fact that, you know, the other thing, in Sarno's books, one of the things that he talked about was sort of people's symptoms often will arise when they've kind of going through this storm of things going on in their life, whether it's hardship or heartache or deaths or whatever, just hard times in life, and they're symptom free. And then that storm ends and then they get symptoms. So like with us in this house, it was mid to late January, I think. Everyone in the house got COVID. My wife got COVID. Both my kids got COVID. It was kind of like me and the dogs and the cat not getting COVID. And I was hanging out with them just as if I would normally, because I'm like, look, I'm not going to be able to escape this thing. And, you know, it just is what it is. And if I catch it, I'm fine. And if I die, whatever. Like, that was just sort of my attitude. And I never caught it. And Nicole Sachs, I talked to her about this. And, I mean, kind of wild, right? Like, this was when, it, like, 40 per University of Washington was giving us data weekly at that time. What's the percentage of tests that are coming back positive? It was like 40% at this period of time. And I never caught it. And then, okay, so the storm ends. Everybody's healthy, probably mid-February or so, early to mid-February. And then I caught just a little baby cold that evolved into like a sinus infection from hell. And I was better. And then a couple days later, right, this back thing starts. So the storm ended, and then So it's like Sarna 101 stuff. So I'm a little disappointed in myself as we're talking. I see Tova smiling, and I'm trying not to look because
I'm smiling because you're being the doctor.
Yeah.
You're being a great doctor and a great therapist. And guess what? You have a little health anxiety. We all do.
Yeah.
This was a huge threat on our health for 2 years, and it brought up a lot of stuff for all of us.
Yeah.
So continue.
So anyway, everyone in the house got healthy. I had the sinus infection from hell, which I don't usually have. It was pretty bad. I don't think I was that sick since the flu I got maybe like 8 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. But it wasn't COVID. I kept testing negative for that. So whatever. But then I had the back thing come up, and a few days after that, we were all supposed to go down to LA to go to Disneyland, which we did. And vacations are, I had this rosy thought in my head of like, I'm taking my two sweet princess daughters to Disneyland to meet the princesses and do all that. And we checked into the hotel. and we weren't at the Disney hotel, but we were across the street from Disney. So like, you could see the fireworks and stuff from the hotel. Like, it's pretty awesome. Because as a kid, when I would go to Disneyland, like, we slept in our car. Like, it's just, we didn't have the money to stay in a hotel. And we went in there, and my oldest daughter, who usually is so sweet and very aware and all this, the first thing that she said was, "This is really small." Like, the room, right? So that's sort of how the vacation began. And I kept having this, the thing that I do as a human being, I tend to stir. I stir a lot. So I dwell on things. And so that was something that I was saying it for the next several days. Like, the kids aren't around, my wife's sitting there, and like, we're watching a show and it's a commercial. And so I'm just trying to think of something funny or witty to say. And I would say, "Oh, that's really small." And she'd just tell me like, "Just drop it. She's 7 years old," like, whatever. But, I told her, like, I think the reason that this irritates me so much is that we slept in our 1977 VW van coming here as a little kid. And if I would have walked into a hotel room and I said, "This is really small," like, the wrath that I would have faced from my mom would have been cataclysmic. It would have been COVID-93. That's how bad it would have been. So just, very different upbringings. I struggle quite a bit with the thought of like, I love my kids. I want to give them the world, but do they appreciate the things that they're given? Because I didn't have those things. My wife didn't have those things. So
the trouble is, Eddie, if I could interrupt, your kids don't know that you didn't have those things.
It's true.
And they're not able to contain it. And if they did, they would be heavily burdened, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Heavily burdened to put that pressure on them. Just like the wrath your mother would have shown you, they would take on their guilt then, wouldn't they? That they didn't appreciate what Daddy had done.
I do that a lot now. My wife says that I'm the richest broke person that she's ever met, because so many money issues as a kid really reflects itself now as an adult, where like, yeah, we have plenty, and I haven't had to make a budget since 2007 or 2008, and it was really tight at that time. But it's not even close to tight at this point. But I we'll go out for a dinner or something, and I'll get the bill, and it's like $86. And $86. Or like, we go to Disneyland, and like a Tinkerbell toy is $16 or $17. And I just like, it just really like grinds my gears about money, like a lot of scarcity. And I don't know, like my parents definitely let me know and let us know a lot that we don't have the money for this, or we don't have the money for that, or we can't afford to do this, or you can't go do that. So I felt that a lot as a little kid. And my kids don't, which is probably why I kind of have that.
But I'm just going to interrupt. I think you're feeling it often.
Yeah.
As an adult, it's like that muscle memory and that memory and that trigger. It's a trigger.
Yeah.
And most of the time you're just like, "Oh, there it is." But sometimes it's deep in your heart of like respect for your parents, love for your children. Conflicting feelings, wouldn't you think that, Rose? Some conflicting feelings there.
Yeah, it just brings up fear in him. As you say, it's sort of still in the body. And until that connection is made, and by putting pressure on a person, the old memories come up and then they become integrated. It's quite fascinating. It's not that the old memory of having no money goes away, but you remember it without the emotion, because the emotion has become integrated and the fear is integrated. And, you know, human beings are very resilient. And, you know, no matter what sort of a childhood we've had, on the whole, in the main, we're resilient enough to bounce back. But in having anxiety over money, as you say, it sort of stays with you until it's actually brought together. The whole idea is brought together in a safe sort of way. You know, for example, you put pressure on how do you feel towards your mother, you know, when she said that, and then that feeling comes up in you and becomes integrated. So, yeah. I don't know if that's a good enough explanation, but at 5 a.m. it feels good.
Yeah, and I think and what Rose has taught me a lot, I mean, the acceptance of this whole, you know, all the players, there's your mom, your daughters, there's the Disney, there's Mickey Mouse, all the players, there's the car, there's the van. And I think the integration of all this and acceptance and the acknowledge and the compassion for yourself, having gone through such a different childhood and then being a father now of girls yet and being a sensitive man with TMS, you know, with pain, and now you're educating people. And I think the integration and acceptance of all that with compassion and gratitude and acceptance is a healthy way to implement it. Like, yeah, that feeling, every time money's going to be spent, that feeling's going to come up. And sometimes you're going to stuff it and you're going to have a back pain. And sometimes you're going to talk to your wife about it, you're still going to have a back pain. Sometimes you're going to really like be with it. Like the difference between being and doing. And what you're talking about is at times over the Disney World trip, you were like being with your feelings. And sometimes you were just like, I got to do something with this.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a beautiful matrix of what you were watching and the feel, you know, it's like and the observation, and you could be like, I don't want to deal with it. But, you know, sometimes you're going to want to embrace it and deal with it. Sometimes you're going to want to stuff it. Just be making the correct choices for what Eddie needs. Yeah. I think it's beautiful what you're going through and what's happening, and it's real live stuff, Ed.
Yeah. Yeah. What else?
I told Rose before the show, I said, ask him how he's doing, and he said he's not doing. He said, like, you know, and I thought, let's work with you on your show. Rose and I can do a session together.
Yeah.
And help you.
Yeah.
Get through Easter?
I don't know about that. I think that when we get to our innermost most feelings, we need a sense of privacy and security. And there are sort of ISTDP models on YouTube if you want to watch it, but they've been done with actors because I think it's too sacred a space to go to publicly.
It's interesting you say that. I had told Tova before you jumped on that my only exposure to learning anything about it is in Dr. Schubiner's book. Have you read, Rose, have you read Dr. Schubiner's book, just Unlearn Your Pain, his most notable book?
Yes, but the thing is that that's just a reflection of Dr. Alan Abbas's book.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
Alan Abbas is the psychiatrist that I suppose that I've learned the most under. Yeah. And Schubiner, I gather, went to Abbas. And
they wrote a book together, Hidden from View, by Abbas and Schubiner.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about ISTDP.
Well, so in the only exposure I have is in his book, he just talks about this. I don't know if it was, he speaks about it as if it was like a real scene, like this actually happened, which I'm sure it did. And he probably just used a different name for somebody, but he's going through and doing a session with them, and it gets almost uncomfortable to read because it does, it gets very dark, and it does get pretty, like, yeah. I remember reading it kind of, I was on a plane, I was reading it, and I was just kind of getting like a visceral feeling, like I'm envisioning myself. I don't do this all that well in books a lot of times, but I did it well for this one. I felt like I was in the corner of the room and this session was going on. But that's the only exposure outside of knowing, Rose, that you do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's very, it brings up all the raw emotions in you, even as you're watching. And by the, in our training, you have to be a healthcare registered person to do the training, because they're actually patients that we see. Like when I go to immersions with Dr. Alan Abbas, for example, you have to sign a document to say that you'll never repeat what you've seen or heard or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're real life patients. And, you know, when he's asking them questions and your own anxiety comes up, you can feel it in your gut. You can feel your, you know, smooth muscle anxiety coming up, and you can feel your stomach churning as the patient is asked these questions. Or you can feel that sort of cognitive disruption when the patient is being interviewed. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alan Abbas has got a clinic in Halifax, and it's for somatic pain. It's in the emergency department. I think Queen Elizabeth Hospital it's called. And when a patient comes in routinely with, say, a particular problem, they're diverted to the psychologist that actually do an interview to see what else is going on for the patient. And then they're put on a waiting list. And usually after, say, a two-hour session with the psychologist, their pain changes, or their perception of the pain changes. And then, of course, they go on later to the actual clinic. But that's alive and well and running. There's also a headache-type clinic in Rochester, New York, that uses ISTDP. There's in the UK, there's functional brain in the north of England somewhere, I can't remember. So this work is being done in hospitals and in facilities around the world, but only little groups. There's also a doctor in Germany who actually uses this model as well for cardiac patients. In Queensland, in Australia, at the Gold Coast Hospital, in the psychiatry department, they're using ISTDP for patients to recover.
You know, Rose, one thing I'd be curious to get your perspective on, and really we've learned next to nothing about either of you guys on the call because we spent this entire hour talking about me. So one thing, in the midst of my TMSing last week and watching and observing everything that I possibly could, about this stuff, I have Sarno's lecture, like his actual lecture, which was on YouTube years ago, and then somebody pulled it down. He's very adamant in that. So Rose, again, as a therapist, I want to get your opinion on this. In that video, he's very explicit in the fact that these are all unconscious feelings that you will never feel. They will never come to the surface. Basically, you're writing them out, knowing that they're there, and that's enough with most of our, you know, the caveat of 85% of clients should never need to go further than that. However, the method, ISTDP, to me sounds entirely the opposite. That is the feelings coming to the surface. So can you just comment a little bit on the I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong on either side, but like, you know, just talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dr. Feinblatt was his psychologist in that, in that Rusk place. Mm-hmm. So apparently Sarno went to some lectures. Davin Liu, who was the person who realized that the unexpressed emotions were the problem, you know, our blockage, I suppose.
Habib Davin Liu was an Iranian psychiatrist who invented, or didn't he created ISTDP?
Well, he was a psychiatrist. that was in Montreal. Sorry. Yeah. But he came down to New York and gave lectures. Apparently, I've been told that Sarno went to his lectures, and after his lectures, a bit like Schubert when he went to Halifax and spoke to Alan Abbas, they realized that they had a missing link, and the missing link was repressed emotions. And usually the repressed emotion is anger, but it could also be grief. It also could be even love, that you were never allowed to express love in your family of origin. But anger and rage is usually the factor that we sort of look at. But Dr. Arlene Feinblatt, who is still around, apparently, she was the influencer in his therapy. After the lectures, if it didn't work, the patients were sent to Irene, or they were sent to someone similar. So in his book, he says only 5% of people need support. But I gather that later he actually said, we need more work.
Yeah. And you see, in all the rage, I'm just interrupting you. I just want to clarify.
We're going to avoid our feelings if they're hurtful and frightening. So by having someone with you, you're able to actually feel them and know you're safe, because your feelings were unsafe when you were young. So, yeah. So, yeah, it's all there in his book. He might not have said it in the lectures, but it's there in the book that a number of people will need extra help. And from what Michael Galinsky's told us, he refined that a bit more as he got on and realized that the more help people got, the quicker they got better. So,
and in the movie, Michael Galinsky is speaking to Arlene Feinblatt in the movie, and she's talking to him and asking him about his feelings, and he begins to laugh, and then he begins to cry, and then she's distinguishing for him the feelings.
And the next tip is he talking about his dad dying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Arlene, when I watched that scene on Friday, I was just thinking how much of a tremendous poker player Arlene would be, because she says, you're talking about all these things, you're in terrible pain, and you're smiling. And he says, yes, I'm smiling. And she goes, we're not going to get very far, are we? And I was just thinking, oh my God, like she's going to kick his ass, like on screen. Like that's what's going to happen. You know, the other thing, because it just came to me, Rose, just based on what you said, because I wrote this down, you said anger or grief. The other thing, I don't know if the two of you listen to this podcast regularly or not, but I'm trying to think of the dates. Again, this was early March that all this stuff kind of came to pass for me. It would have been right around like March 1st, March 2nd, March 3rd, somewhere around there, where my dog was in, he was in such dire straits that there was enough of me that called the vet to say, hey, I want to have a quality of life exam for my pup, for Barkley. He's 13 years old. He's been on medications now for a couple of years. His back legs aren't working, but it's been particularly bad the last few days. At first, they had told me, the vet, I don't know how veterinary care is in the rest of the world during COVID, but here, at least in my state, you pull up to your vet, you call them. They come to the car, they take your pet, you don't see them, they call you, and then they tell you how it went. So when I had called to make this appointment, they had said, okay, well, we don't have an appointment, but you can drop him off in the morning and then come back and get him later in the evening, and the doctor will call you at some point and tell you what's going on. And first I was like, okay, but then I actually stopped myself and I told her with these words how shitty I thought that was. I'm like, this could be the last time that I ever bring this dog alive to the vet. Like, I just want to know how far gone is he? Is it salvageable? Is there something I'm not seeing here? And they ended up letting me come in. I was like the first vet patient that's been able to actually come into the office for 2 years after sticking my ground in that way. But we brought, and the vet is phenomenal. He's saved a couple of our pets from death a couple of times, actually. So brought Barkley in. He had said that, you know, he's not doing great, but it doesn't seem like this, because I was like prepared to put him down that week, like right around March 8th or so. And he said, I think he's, you know, we'll try him on a different med. We'll take this med off. You know, we'll kind of see how it goes. So I felt good enough, and we left for vacation on March 11th or March 10th. But then when we got back, my suspicion is that he had a stroke that night, and we put him down the next day. We put him down on the 20th or 21st. So again, just continuing to go with all the things that we've talked about on this call. But then since you had said grief, Rose, that was an enormous like thing to deal with, was like this dog. I mean, I've had him since I was 23. Yeah. And he was the first pet that my wife and I ever adopted together. And so it just sucked. But because you said grief, that was something that came to mind that was going on right at that time too.
Yeah. Yeah. And if people don't, if people don't acknowledge their grief, well, then it becomes a problem as well.
Yeah.
And it shows up in pain as well. Yeah.
It's been longer than I promised.
What was that?
I said it's been longer than I promised, because we were supposed to be done with this 10 minutes ago. But
I just want to say one thing regarding ISTDP and your work, and to anybody that's listening. You know, I'm just a whole different therapist after working with Rose for 2 years and working with clients along with her and learning so much and meeting so many people. One amazing thing that ISTDP brought out, which is also what's in Sarno's book and what David Hanscom's talking about, and what Howard Schubiner, what we're all talking about, is, you know, when we bring the unconscious conscious, when we're able to do that and then apply that to our life, we're on our healing journey.
Yeah.
And that's really what that's really what's happening. So for you and for anyone listening, if we can bring our unconscious conscious and stay with that uncomfortable feeling and be with that, that's an insight that you can apply, and healing will happen.
You know, at some point, I'd love to have you both back to actually talk about you. But thank you so much. That's all I want to say is thanks
that's
for coming
great.
On.
Well, you can call us and for a follow up, and we can do some great work with you. And your poor dog, he's just, you know, he's in peace. So yeah. You be in peace now.
Yeah. No, I know that. And the, you know, that again, that's another thing, is like, it's not just managing my own grief, but then the grief of the kids who just, on a whim's notice, with no notice, just explode into tears. You know, so all that was, and I think we only had, because the concern was that he was going to just pass away in our house that day. So I called the euthanasia, like because it was a Sunday. So like nobody's open, and the people that come to your home and do it. And I had called them, and they had said like, we either have to do it in an hour or we don't have an opening for 4 more days. So like it was that fast. Like they were here and he had passed within 70 minutes. So there was no time to set myself up or process or any of that beforehand. And you know, rushing the kids off, saying we got to go take the kids to my parents' house. You know, so it's,
so you rushed the kids off so they weren't there.
Yeah, I just think it's 7 and 4 to have them there when the vet actually puts the whatever that cocktail is that euthanizes an animal. I just did not want that. And we put a dog down in 2019, but we made that decision a week ahead of time. And like the morning of, I remember I took him on a little walk, and he was, you know, he was mobile. He was he definitely was at the end, but at least he could walk around and all that. And I had a week to really just kind of get it all through my system and do all that. With Barkley, his eyes remained open for about 18 straight hours and didn't close. His heart was beating and he was breathing. But wow. It was just this, like these long labored breaths. And that's why we just kept worrying. Like if the girls come down, like say they're upstairs playing or whatever, then they come downstairs and he's laying in this bed in the living room. And I think it's a lot. It would be too much for 7 and a 4-year-old to see. my opinion, and I know everybody's different.
Eddie, you're a sensitive boy. You're a sensitive man. You have to own that.
Yeah.
You're a sensitive man.
Yeah. I mean, well, I told you before, I coach girls soccer too. So I got 9 other ones that I get to see twice a week and manage the, you know, their stuff too. So
the Mind and Fitness Podcast, the sensitive man, yeah. Eddie Levinstein.
You know, Brad, I know you brought up Brad earlier, but him and I we've done a few shows together, but the most recent one we did, we recorded it in my garage. It was summer, so we were both wearing tank tops and we have visible tattoos and all that. And the name of the episode was Two Guys with Tank Tops and Tattoos Talk About Their Feelings. And that's what we did for an hour.
Lovely.
I love it. Yeah. Now you can have two grannies talking about their feelings.
No, but I do have to come up with the name of this episode. So there was a quote I wish I would have written down. I'm going to go back and listen to it. Rose said something about 3 or 4 minutes ago that's the perfect title, and now I can't remember what it is or what she had said. But I'm going to have to go back and listen to it.
How about bringing your unconscious conscious and healing?
Yeah.
Rose and Tova.
Yeah, yeah. Something along those lines for sure. Well, hey, thanks both of you for coming on. Rose, enjoy the rest of your vacation. The three of us will be in touch because I do want to come back and do at minimum one extra episode, more than likely a couple, at least over the next few months. Does that sound good to you guys?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Good. Have a wonderful Easter. It's Passover for us and Easter for Rose, and the whole world's turning from winter to spring. So blessings to you and your family.
Darling, I'm in the Southern Hemisphere, remember?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to keep forgetting.
Yeah. I went down there, my wife and I went to Australia in 2012 for your winter, and we spent a few days in Uluru, and it felt like it was 4,000 degrees, but I think it was really about upper 90s or whatever, and I was going, this is winter? Like, what are you people doing? swam the Great Barrier Reef, hung around Sydney, did all that in your winter, and it was warmer than our summer, which is, I know we're on opposite. So our summer.
We are global. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't be more actually. So where the three of us are now, like literally, it's a triangle of the world. You know, triangle of Earth.
Amazing.
So, thank you both
so
again.
So happy that you opened up our email. I'm so happy that we're here. And Rose, I always love hanging out with you wherever we're at. Take care,
Eddie. All right, bye guys. Thank you.
Be well. Bye.
Bye, Tom.